KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. This is the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show, and it is a beautiful, beautiful Sunday afternoon. Let me do some roll call because I am working from home. Claudette, we have you in the newsroom.
Hi, Dr. Wendy. How are you?
I know your mother calls you Claudette, but being a Canadian, I still have to call you Claudette.
You know, I actually like that version. No one ever says it to me, but I love it. I love
it's
the French
just
version.
It's how the French version should be. Glad you're with us. Did you get out in that sunshine today before you came to work?
I got to tell you, nothing felt better than getting my coffee today and then like having my hand out the window and being like, wait a minute, that's heat. I like it. Yes.
I know. It's coming. It's a hint of good days ahead for us. Zach, you with us on the board?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and you remember, you got to watch my clock because I get rambling and then before you know it, so just yell in my ear. And Kayla, we have Kayla Austin. Is she with you?
Hey, Dr. Wendy.
How are you? Did you get out in the sunshine?
On the drive here. Other than that, I had a pretty lazy Sunday. Didn't do much.
I texted you earlier. Were you sleeping?
A little bit, yeah.
Sunday morning, you're allowed. Anyway, I'm glad the team's all here. If you are new to my show, I have a PhD in clinical psychology. My specialty is human attachment, an area of psychology called attachment theory, the ways we attach to each other, to ourselves, the relationship we have with ourselves, to our pets, to our stuff across the lifespan. And I am here for you. I want everyone to know that this feeling, this little peak of optimism that came with the sunshine in Southern California today is real. Now, we know that this so-called herd immunity that's got to be 70, 80% is probably going to be like in the fall, but there are baby steps towards that as we open. You know, we now have outdoor dining back. The swimming pool that I was swimming at in the past that was closed down opened up again a week ago. Only 5 people are able to use it at once, but it was just so nice to be out there, swim my laps today, talk to a couple people, and it just felt like, oh, life is coming back. Have you seen on Instagram the grandparents hugging their grandchildren after a year? I want to remind everybody, we are 12% fully vaccinated. 12%. And that seemed like it happened so fast to me. And so if you can imagine, we have 2 more vaccines coming on the market soon. So there will be a choice of 4. They will be shipped quickly. I think right now in California, if you're 18 to 64 and you have an underlying health condition, a list of those health conditions you can find online, you can get vaccinated. Of course, anybody over 65, any healthcare worker. Next in line are teachers. I mean, we are heading back to life. But in the meantime, we have to do it carefully, which simply means get together with people you love, especially if they're vaccinated. Make sure it's outdoors. Make sure you wear your mask. Make sure it's not groups of more than 10. It will be a long time before we crowd together in theaters and stadiums. It's going to be a long time for that. But let's get the love we can from our social connections in small groups outdoors. And since the weather's slowly getting warmer, this is all going to be possible for us. Okay, what do we have coming up in the show? I have quite a show for you. I want to talk about the state of our union. Some new data is coming out about, are we breaking up? Are we getting closer? What's happening over this? I also, because so many people have written to me on social media and otherwise, asking about like, am I in the friend zone? Or am I doing a friends first romantic relationship? There's all kinds of language we use for these, you know, undefined relationships, friends with benefits, a situationship, but they're all the same thing. And if you want them to turn into love, there's one thing that has to happen. I'll explain that to you. There's new research out on why people leave relationships and why they stay. Might be interesting for you to hear what other people are doing. I'm also going to be taking your calls. Yes. Should I stay or should I go? Have you had that question in your mind or any question about your love life? In the second hour, give us a call. And also thank you to all the shy listeners who write to me during the week on my social media. By the way, the social media everywhere is at Dr. Wendy Walsh, at Dr. Wendy Walsh, W-A-L-S-H. And so you send me private messages on Instagram and on Facebook, or you send emails through my website, and I promise to protect your anonymity, but you would not believe some of the questions I got this week, you guys. And I want you to really think about them. A toddler taking naked baths with a stepmother. a man who's experiencing homelessness, who's in a weird relationship with the liquor store owner, when to give out your phone number on a dating app, how to get back into the dating world if you're in your late 40s or 50s. I've got all kinds of questions that people have sent me, but you could give me a call too. All right, data. I said it's coming in. All right, last April, really started in March, but the data started coming out in April. In March, we went on lockdown. Now, remember what our lives were like before? We spent a chunk of our life in traffic. We spent a small bit of our life maybe watching streaming stuff. We spent part of our life with our kids, part of our life with our lover. We spent a lot of time socializing and going to events. Well, if you look at your life and the breakup of hours in a 24-hour day, everything changed where you are now spending the bulk of your time with the people in your household. So the data comes out from last April where more than half of our population spend 18 hours a day in their homes. You see, they know where we are because of our cell phones. They have all the location data. Yeah, there's a thing called Safe Graph, and they're figuring out where we are at all times. I know Big Brother is here, but that's a whole nother conversation. The data is here because of it. And so the people that we usually saw the most were actually our coworkers. And now we're with our spouses, with our kids, with our roommates, and the places we used to go, workplaces, bars, grocery stores. Now we're sitting around at home. 1 in 8 people have been home alone. 2 in 5 were home with kids. Almost half were in a household with another adult. So what happened to us? What did we do? Well, we mostly saved time on commuting, right? Because I love the fact that I'm not driving. I'm happy about that. But what did we replace it with? Oh my goodness, you're not going to believe what we replaced our newfound time with, according to the latest research. You would like to think it was about spending intimate time with the ones we love, but nope. There was another kind of relationship we were all having, and I'll tell you about it when we come back. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. What are we doing with our extra time now that we're not on the road? Well, research shows that spending more time with your spouse, with your lover, actually increases happiness. It creates greater well-being in couples. In fact, one study of time use in the Netherlands calculated that couples were willing to even sacrifice a tenth of their hourly earnings just so they could synchronize their schedules and spend more time together. So now we have this opportunity to spend time together. And guess what the bulk of us have been doing? Childcare, that's understandable. Childcare, working, but the biggest change, watching more television. I'm serious. Watching television, all those streaming shows, all those series, all those movies, that's what you're doing when you could be bonding with your loved one? I know, you're trying to create boundaries within the household. So my advice to you is turn off that TV. You know, there's been research to show that if you have a television in the bedroom, that you have less sex. Just saying. All right, throwing that out there. Let us move along. I want to talk about, I get a lot of stuff on social media. And in fact, when I did my live stream on Wednesday, we talked about it a bit, about friend zone. So if you don't know what the term friend zone is, it usually applies to a male where a woman is friends with the man. They're very close. They may be emotionally intimate, like really good friends. He may be very kind and doing a lot of stuff for her, but there's no sex. And he thinks if I'm just hang out there and be this good guy and helpful, she'll eventually see me as mate material. Now, the flip side of that is nowadays called a situationship or a friends with benefits. And friends with benefits, by the way, benefits men a whole lot more than it benefits women. Because women, of course, often are wanting a more emotional connection in the relationship. So they think, well, I'm going to trade sex for love. I'm going to be the nice girl, the fun girl. I'm going to come on over, have fun sex with him, never be a pain in the butt, never be a biatch, and he'll eventually look at me and say, well, that is wife material. Look at how nice she is. I hope you're all laughing, because we know the guy who gives too much kindness and the woman who gives too much sex loses. It's the oldest trade in the history of our species, trying to trade sex in exchange for love, or for men trying to exchange kindness in exchange for sex. It doesn't happen. And so what happens is people will stay in these states of unknowing for really long periods of time because they want more and they don't know how to ask for more, because then they feel it'll be over. In other words, they're kind of satisfied by having even part of a person. And that has to do with their own attachment style and everything else. So the question I'm asked all the time is, how do I convert a friend zone to a romantic relationship? Or how do I convert a friends with benefits into some definition? Like, how can I make him my boyfriend? How do I bring it up? And the answer is, you better comment on it and you better bring it up. And if they cannot give you that at that time, you better be ready to leave. You know, the best way for a guy to get out of the friend zone is to walk out of the friend zone. That doesn't mean walk into the relationship. It means walk out of the friend zone. So the next time she calls you and says, can you come pick me up at the my car's in the shop, and can you drive me to the airport, or would you mind trying to fix, there's a little leak under my sink. Can you have to say, oh, I wish I could, but I've got plans. Got to go. And she's going to go, where'd he go? What happened? He was so helpful. And maybe there's a chance she might see him as mate material when she thinks that other female mates are getting his kindness. A chance, but not a big one, but it's a chance. Women as well. The next time he says at 1 a.m, you still up? You want to come over? Do not respond. If you want a relationship with somebody, right? That's the way to do it. So how do you tell? Now, there's also lots of research to show that relationships that begin as a friendship are much more solid relationships. You know, it takes time to make an informed decision about how much of a good match this partner is for you. So sometimes it is from within these established friendships that we're able to really be in the best position to see if that person would be a good mate. There's been lots of research on relationships that begin with lust and relationships that begin with friendship. And those that go friendship first often have higher levels of commitment, higher levels of emotional intimacy. We used to call that, I still call it sometimes, companionate love. Because at the end of the day, the lust goes down and the companionate love is the most important. People do prefer partners who have similar personality traits, and you don't know that until you're friends for a while. So how do you know if this is a friends first courtship or this is a friend zone situationship, friends with benefits? And the answer is reciprocity. If you're giving and they're not giving back, you do something nice for them and they don't call you until they need you to do something nice for them again, that's not reciprocity. If you go to his house and have sex with him at night and he never, ever is seen in public with you, never takes you out to any event that might make you happy, that is not reciprocity. Reciprocity. An investment in the relationship is how you tell. And I know it's hard to let it go, but if you're not being fulfilled, if you're being feeling unhappy in this relationship, if you want definition, go find it with somebody who will give you definition, because you're probably not going to convert this one. Okay, I'm sorry. Bad news, right? When we come back, I have a doctor who wrote a book called Bond. And it's about your relationship with your doctor. I think during COVID, we care about our relationships with our doctors more than ever. How to have a great relationship with the person who's going to keep you alive for a long time. His name is Dr. Ken Redcross, and he's next. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. This is the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. You know, when I was a kid growing up, my mom had a chronic lifelong disease called lupus erythematosus. I learned to say it when I was 7, that had all kinds of features because she had systemic lupus erythematosus and dermatological lupus erythematosus. And she had an interesting relationship with their doctor. She would come home sometimes so mad. I had a fight with my doctor over this. I don't want to take this pill. I don't need a steroid. And it was so funny. It was like he was her side lover, because he had her on this emotional roller coaster. Usually it was good. It was a good, healthy relationship. But I look back on that and I'm like, wow, they were really close. Well, my guest has written a book about how to have a healthy relationship with your doctor. And it's called Bond, the Four Cornerstones of a Lasting and Caring Relationship with Your Doctor. Welcome, Dr. Ken Redcross. Hi, Dr. Redcross. How are you?
Hello there, Dr. Wendy. Thanks for having me on. I am excited to be on with you today.
Well, I have to say, I spent some time Googling you, and I wanted, when I saw your website about concierge medicine and all the language that psychologists love, empathy, compassion, bond, I was like, and a picture of you with a doctor bag making house calls, I immediately tried to figure out where you were, but apparently a house call to me would mean a 5-hour flight. Right, you're in New York?
Oh, unfortunately, 3,000 miles away. But you know, I started out in California. That's where I started my first practice when I trained here at Columbia in the city.
Ah, and now you left me. I can't have you as my concierge.
I know. I'm sorry.
So let's talk about why you wrote the book. I don't know if you just heard my story about my mom having this wild relationship with her doctor for years and years because she had a chronic illness. How did you get the idea to write about this?
You know what, Wendy, it's funny you say that there, because let me tell you, your story that you share with your mom, a story that's really being shared with millions of people all around the United States. And I saw that when I started practice. Once again, when I started there in California, I noticed that there were a few things. That was when healthcare was starting to change a lot, Dr. Wendy. And so healthcare was becoming more about volume than about value. And that relationship was being lost. And I just didn't think it was fair to patients to wait all day long to see us and that they get 7.5 minutes on average. It wasn't fair to me. And I said, you know, I wanted to really do something special. And I really wanted to kind of articulate what are the special things that make that doctor-patient relationship one is really close to a family relationship. Your doctor should always feel like a member of your family, as far as I'm concerned.
And what are the four cornerstones of a caring relationship with your doctor?
Well, you know, throughout 20 years of my practice, one of the things I realized is that these four important things were just as important in a relationship, as you mentioned, with your mom's doctor, almost in a relationship with your husband or your wife. Trust, respect, empathy, and communication. That big C word, communication, is incredibly important because it really kind of brings all of those together. But you have to have all four of those, because when one of them kind of falters, that's when there's an issue. That's when there's a problem. And I realized that over time, to really be able to even check myself sometimes to say, you know what, I need to make sure that I can help build a little more trust so they don't feel like they need to reach out to Dr. Google all day. They need to be able to call me. So maybe that's where I needed to kind of lift, to kind of bring my A game. And so I realized that with those four things, they were incredibly important to make sure that we had what I like to call, Dr. Wendy, creating a patient nirvana. And that was the way we could do it.
It's interesting when you say trust, respect. And I left a doctor one time because every time I left her office, I felt afraid. I did a body check. And her marketing to keep getting me come back as often as possible was to scare the heck out of me. And instead, I would see another doctor who would say, no, your numbers aren't that bad. Let's tweak a few little things and we got this. Yep. And I really felt like
there
I had a partner in it.
And that's the important thing. And you're right. That's the important thing. Well, you know, I always say any of my patients, if you ask any of them, Dr. Wendy, I always say, I don't give bad news. I don't believe in bad news. Sometimes we have some little things that we need to tweak along the way. But as far as negativity and bad news, absolutely not. We are a team in this. And you're right. You should never, ever feel like you're scared. And I always say that these four walls that we're in here in my office, this is a no judgment zone. This is where we are here together to create magic. And it's the magic of healing, health, and happiness.
So what advice do you have for people who have a relationship with their doctor that doesn't have mm-hmm. the degree of trust? Can you convert it, or do they need to find a new doctor?
No, not necessarily. It just depends, because once again, it's those four cornerstones. Sometimes docs will have two of the four or three of the four. So yes, they are fixable. But the first thing you need to understand is that it is on you, the patient, to make sure that this is an active appointment. By that, I mean, I want everyone, before you see your doctor next time, think of it as if you're really creating a true strategy. You wouldn't go into a game and not have a plan to beat the opponent. Now, we're not trying to beat the opponent here, but what we are trying to do is have a valuable relationship, a valuable meeting the next morning for our appointment. So make sure it's active. Have your list of questions out. What are you going to ask? What do you want to have accomplished? Even if you have to do something like, I need to have a little more time with my doc. I've had patients, Dr. Wendy, that say they were having a tough time because, as you know, when you go to the doctor's office, there's these 15-minute slots. Well, mm-hmm. an idea of an active visit is to say, you know what, Dr. So-and-so, I love seeing you, but you know me, I'm a talker. Can we please have two slots today? Or when I see you tomorrow, can we do a 30-minute slot? That's making sure it's an active visit, that you're not just going to the doctor's office, getting told what to do, getting a prescription, and going off on your merry way. That's not the way it should be. I think it should really be a relationship and investment that really begins before the appointment, during the appointment, and after the appointment.
And I also know that you do some work training doctors in better communication and empathy skills, because, you know, having a good bedside manner isn't something that medical schools have done really well, taught really well in the past. And so, because, you know, think of it, to get into medical school, you've got to have like this left brain analytical and memorize a dictionary of biology and spew it out on tests. And then all of a sudden, now your piece of biology that you studied is a walking, talking, breathing human, and you've got to have a connection with that person. So what's the number one thing you tell doctors about how to have a better relationship with their parents? I mean, with the patients and their parents.
With their patients and their parents, both actually. You know, one of the main things is that, look, you have to kind of be a little introspective and recognize that this is a calling. In order for us to be able to go out each and every day, and for me to honestly feel very blessed to be able to touch people's lives each and every day, I mean, what better job could this be? And so what happens when healthcare has changed a bit and it's become more about volume, docs kind of forget why they got into it. You kind of forgot that that patient is not that computer screen that we were stuck dialing in and trying to input all this information to see our next person. They're a human, breathing, living human being that has feelings. And to your point earlier, they're scared. So when they come to us, that's the first thing we have to do. We need to kind of break that ice to say, don't worry, I got you. We're okay. And so that's the first thing for the doc to realize why we did this in the first place. And that's something that gets a little bit lost lots of times, because some of my colleagues are quite jaded at where kind of healthcare is going or headed, or they feel a little stuck. And that's what I don't want them to feel.
Exactly. We have very little time left, but I think there's some very important medical advice you want to give to everybody about how we can have our immune system strong enough against COVID. What is that?
Yeah, guys, and that's because we talk about the important things, the masks, the social distancing, washing our hands, but let's not forget about being able to kind of boost our immune system. So that's a vitamin D story. Vitamin D is one of the most important vitamins that we should get each and every day, not because it treats COVID, but it's because it boosts the immune system. So you have to know your levels. You want to make sure they're between 40 and 60, everyone. So either go to your doctor's office. There's websites out there that are great. Nutrient of the Power of D.org is a place where you can order an at-home test kit. So it doesn't matter if you go to thepowerofd.org or your doctor. You just need to know your levels, everyone, because we need something a little special to kind of get us over that hump. We have the vaccine that's here, and we have some options coming with the vaccine, but make sure you know your vitamin D levels. I like to joke around with Dr. Wendy. I joke around and say, make it a challenge at home to get on my level. And when I say get on my level, I'm talking about our vitamin D level, everyone. Incredibly important to stay closer to the earth, if you will. When we're
I take mine every day. I take my vitamin D every day. Thank you so much, Dr. Ken Redcross. His book is called Bond, The Four Cornerstones of a Lasting and Caring Relationship with Your Doctor. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Wendy. Stay well, everybody.
I will. And when we come back, why some people leave their relationships and some people stay. Very interesting data. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI, AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Oh, help me, please, doctor. I'm damaged. There's a pain where there once was a heart.
KFI, AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. I am the doctor of love. I am obsessed with the biological, psychological, and sociological pieces of love. Don't worry. I got the science of love, and I'm happy to share it with you. So during lockdown, as I mentioned, way too many of us have been watching TV and not paying attention to our relationships. Some people believe, and of course, those who stand to make money off this, like the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, that we are going to see divorce filings increase as lockdown lightens up in the second half of this year. That's partly because just a lot of divorce courts were closed and not taking filings. So there's just sort of a delayed flow. But I think for the most part, those people that didn't kind of break up right away, probably their relationship got more solid because they could see how well their partner did during a time of crisis. But no matter what, whether you are dating somebody and wondering whether to take it to the next step of commitment and being an official couple, whether you're dating somebody and thinking about proposing marriage and making it that kind of commitment, whether you're thinking of moving in together, whether you're thinking of separating and moving out from each other or divorcing from each other, at some point, people face the complicated decision of whether to stick it out, whether to transition into something more serious or whether to call it quits. So there's interesting research done by psychology researchers Samantha Joel, Jeff McDonald, and Elizabeth Page Gould. They interviewed over 400 people who were at the time questioning their relationship. And basically they asked them, so what are some of the reasons you might give for wanting to stay? And what are some of the reasons you might give for wanting to leave your partner? So half the participants reported feeling inclined to stay in a troubled relationship. Okay, this makes total sense because here's the thing. Inertia is a powerful thing. If you talk to many divorced people and you ask them, do you regret your divorce? More often you hear, you know, I wish I'd left earlier. If I knew how great it would be once I got through that pain, but I was avoiding the pain of divorce. So I stayed much longer than I should have. That's true. It's because we're just in inertia and we want to avoid pain. However, the same people in that study also had an above average inclination to leave, meaning that they kind of rated themselves as leaning towards a breakup. So this is a problem. They're inclined to stay, but they want to leave. So what are the reasons why people stay or leave according to the research? Well, here's the positive side. First of all, here's the reason to leave. Number one reason is infidelity. Just saying, everybody. And I always believe an affair is a symptom of the problem. It's like the final nail in the coffin, the final straw that broke the camel's back. It is the final thing that goes, okay, it's really over because I've just left the relationship physically, right? So it's not that the affair causes the breakup. It's the affair is the final thing where you're like, yeah. Other reasons why people leave, they say, well, breach of trust, as I've just said, partner withdrawal. So that happens a lot. One partner will be like, they just check out. They're just not even there emotionally anymore. Sometimes it's physical distance. A lot of people are in long distance relationships now because they're meeting on apps all over the place. Sometimes it's conflict. Sometimes it's, as I said, partner withdrawal includes emotional distance. Sometimes it's money. It's lack of financial benefits. I'm sorry, but if you sign a deal that says, I'm going to stay with you until sickness and in health for richer or for poorer, but at the time, both people have good jobs and incomes flowing in, and one person starts to become a couch potato, they're not raising kids or doing much domestic, and they are just taking your money, at a certain point, somebody's going to want to leave. But more interesting to me is why people stay. Even when they report they'd like to leave, but I love this because we all have valleys, right? They stay, they say, because of the emotional intimacy. You see, if you do actually connect with somebody in an authentic way, that becomes the glue, and it can be a good glue that gets you through the valley. Sometimes they stay for family duty, which is a good thing. Staying together for the children, according to research, is actually really good for the kids. Kids are oblivious to the bickering or whatever, unless there's like, it's a toxic nest for the kids with a violence or, you know, addiction and, you know, chronic cheating and a lot of pain. You know, two couples that are, or two partners that have just kind of grown apart, kids don't notice as long as both partners are still investing in the kids. So family duty. Other reasons for staying? Enjoyment, emotional security, physical intimacy, compatibility, concern for your partner, and yes, the financial benefits. So these are the things that people think about when they decide whether to leave or whether to stay. And I want to remind you that when Till Death Do Us Part was invented, death was pretty imminent. And because of our continuing lengthening life expectancies, even the most monogamous of humans can expect 2 or even 3 long stints of monogamy in the lifespan with some mate selection in between. We call that dating. When we come back, I am going to start to take your calls. Do you have any love questions for me? The number is 1-800-520-1KFI. That's 1-800-520-1534. 520-1534. Pick up the phone. Talk to Kayla. Tell us what question you think I can ask about answer. You're going to ask, and I'll answer about your love life. And I've got some listener questions that were posted online too. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.